welcome one and all once again to Third World in episode 145. After a pretty fancy E3 season, we're back to actually being numbered. And with E3 come and gone, it means that news and stuff has shut down, but that doesn't mean there isn't stuff to talk about. We are joined this week by Daniel.
Hello.
And by Martin.
Hi.
You both sound so enthused. Is it because I'm taking you away from the World Cup?
Not really. That game is really boring.
I care about the World Cup. That's news.
I don't know. I assume you're like Americans who care about when we do well and then don't care about it for the other 4 years it goes on.
No, I don't care about fucking the World Cup. Fuck it.
Fair enough. So, like I said, we have plenty to talk about this week. Actually, we have a lot of games to talk about, because I don't think we've actually done that in like 3 weeks. So we have a few titles to kick it off with, and we're actually going to kick it off with not retail titles, but alphas and betas coming out of E3. I guess real quick, I don't imagine much has changed, but do either one of you want to offer up any updated impressions on Battlefield Hardlines?
Don't buy it!
I actually didn't play it anymore after we talked about it on the last podcast.
No, I didn't either, but
I really didn't care.
Well, this is how you sell a video game. This is why companies stop doing demos.
Well, it helps if the company makes a new fucking game. That's all I'm going to say. If you make a new game and you make it better than the previous game, then by all means, have a demo. But if you're not going to make a new game, you're just going to take an old game and make it worse. Don't do a demo. Just be as dishonest as you like.
I was about to say, I think they needed the alpha because a lot of people were upset about the netcode in Battlefield 4, which is still not completely working as far as I know. So I guess this was kind of, but it seems like this had the opposite reaction where a lot of people are just like, this is Battlefield with cops and robber skin.
It didn't feel as broken as the Battlefield 4 beta, for example, but it just isn't anything exciting or new or interesting.
And I think that's a worse crime, because you can improve netcode. You can't really make something interesting if people don't find it interesting. So yeah, there's that. We didn't talk about this, because I think it actually started the day after we recorded it, the Destiny Alpha.
Yes.
Which Martin did get a chance to check out.
Yeah. And
hold on, just before you start.
Oh,
if
okay.
If you're in the Destiny Alpha, does that mean you automatically get into the Destiny Beta?
No.
Oh, so you have to sign up for the
beta
again.
No, you would have to pre-order the game.
The easiest way to do it, if you don't want to actually buy the game yet, what you do is you pre-order it on Amazon, wait until you get your code, and then cancel your pre-order.
That's exactly what I did.
Yep.
Oh yeah, that's what I did too!
Yeah,
forgot
exactly.
About that.
Exactly.
That was so long ago.
But at this point, after the Alpha, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get that game because I was really impressed by the Alpha.
You don't know how much video I watched of that game.
It's really good. It's really good.
And I was just sitting there going, I can't have this game.
So, I probably should start because a lot of people, before they actually played the game, for some reason had no idea what that game actually is. And I heard one comparison, if you want to break it down, it's like the love child of Halo, Borderlands, and Guild Wars. I thought it was the best description of the different parts in this game, because the basic gameplay, like from the feel of the shooting and how enemies react and stuff like that, that all feels very much like a Halo game, except now you can also have not just hipfire, but you also aim down sights. Then the Borderlands part is that you can basically play everything in co-op, and the game has loot, and there's underlying RPG systems in the sense that your character levels up, but also your weapons and armor and stuff can level up and can get different, and you can get different skills through that. And then the Guild Wars part basically is that this game also has lots of MMO trappings. So when you walk through the world, other people can just show up and you can meet people in the wild and you can team up and then do stuff together. You can just join a friend's fire team, which is basically the teams in this game. And you can do story missions together. You can just explore and do some like over and over repeatable like collection or kill quests. Then you can also do strikes together, which is basically the MMO equivalent of raids, but on a smaller scale. It's just three players go into a dungeon. There are lots of hard enemies, and you fight big, big bosses. And the last part then is the competitive multiplayer, which in the alpha was just capture and hold, where you had to hold 3 points on a map, and they had two maps. One was just on foot, and the other also had some vehicles, like sci-fi hover bikes with guns on them, and like a hover tank. And once you play it, it all just kind of fits really well together. You very quickly get into this rhythm of, okay, here's now an interesting fight with these enemies, which are kind of hard. Then, okay, I get some cool, maybe I got some cool loot from them. Let's check that out. Then, or maybe you got some unidentified loot. Then you can go back to the tower and let that be identified. Or I think in this game, if I remember correctly, we call it decrypted. And then you get a really nice flow with this. And I really like the combat, especially during the strike missions, because they ramp up the difficulty quite a bit. You can even choose different difficult levels, and the bosses are just hard. I mean, in this one strike you got in the alpha, the first boss was the spider tank, which has been shown in a couple of videos and trailers, I think. And some people have been complaining about those being just bullet sponges, but there are tactics to these bosses. For example, the spider tanks required you to focus fire on one of its legs, because as soon as you destroyed the outer armor of the leg, the tank kind of collapses, and it reveals like its weak point. There's like, I don't know what it's supposed to be, its engine or something that opens up, and then you can basically just shoot its weak point. Then you try to repeat this. If people are not coordinated enough and just shoot at the thing willy-nilly, it does take some time until one of the legs just gets enough damage.
To be fair to them, that is kind of how we're trained on shooters these days, just to shoot things until they die. I don't think people are necessarily grown up on the Capcom design of there's a giant glowing weak spot that you should exploit. We're just kind of like, you shoot it enough times, it dies.
Yeah.
I think it's more the fact that, like, in the game, like, when it comes out, the chances are is you'll get told at some point to shoot his legs out and then uncover the weak spot and then shoot in the weak spot. Whereas from what I got from videos is it just drops the tank and it's like, here, shoot this.
Oh, yeah, the alpha doesn't explain anything. So I would suspect that that will be the case in the full game. On the other side, I didn't mind actually having to find out how to tackle that thing. The first time I did it, it took quite some time. But when I repeated the strike, I could just, if the other people didn't know, could just say, hey, concentrate on one of the legs, then it's way easier. and stuff like that. I also really like that you didn't necessarily have to have friends for these strikes. Stuff. They have really good matchmaking for all the stuff. So I could just say, hey, I want to play the strike, and it matched me up with other players on my level. I mean, and by level, I meant character level. And then we could do the strike together. And What is it, what one did I want to say? Oh, right. And I also really like that in the competitive multiplayer, I think they call it the Crucible, that they normalize all the weapon damage and stuff. So even if you have, like, really fucking awesome gear, it's just going to be visual flair in the PvP. Which is a good thing, I think, because otherwise it might easily be a balance problem if people could just bring the best gear into a game when other players might not go on strike missions, for example, because some people might not enjoy them and stuff like that.
Yeah, it also helps when, you know, if somebody puts 100 hours in, you don't want to be like the guy who comes in and you can't really compete with them because you just don't have that gear and you won't have it for some time.
Yeah. And that doesn't seem to be a problem. It seems like the damage gets normalized to a point of it just matters which weapon class you have. So your primary weapon, for example, can be a hand cannon or a pulse rifle or an assault rifle, and it just boils then down to the basic weapon stats for that weapon class. And I think that's totally fine, because when you boil it down, there are not that many different weapons in an FPS game. Look at Halo. How many weapons did the last Halo game have?
A bunch.
It basically had all your standard ones, your shotgun. And
yeah, if you boil it down, I mean, it's like usually like around 8 different ones. 8 to 10.
And
it comes down the same here. You have, like, I think 4 different primary ones, 3 or 4 different special ones, and then I think there are 3 different heavy ones. So it boils down to about the same. And what they do is you bring in your own gear, so your weapon loadout, but then you only have ammunition, a lot of ammunition for a primary gun, and then just a little ammunition for a special gun, and no ammunition for a heavy gun. So then it becomes, they basically don't drop special weapons into the maps, instead they drop the heavy ammo into the match. So then when this kind of ammo appears, then a lot of players try to get to it, because then you have can use your heavy weapons, which is like a rocket launcher or a heavy machine gun, and those weapons, of course, do a ton of damage. What else is there? I really like the skill system, seems kind of cool. I mean, you don't have a bunch of skills at the same time. You basically have 3 abilities. You have a grenade, which, for example, for the hunter is like a fire grenade, which does damage over time. For the Titan, it's... I forgot what it was for the Titan. Well, it doesn't matter. And for the Warlock, it's like a bubble that you create, and that does a lot of damage when enemies stay in it. It's kind of like black hole thing. And then everyone also has an ability which corresponds with your melee attack. So, for example, when you play the Warlock and the ability is not on cooldown and you do a melee attack, it basically kills the enemy if it's not a really strong one. And then it reduces the cooldown on your grenade, so you can use it faster again. And the third thing for every class is the super attack, basically. So for the Warlock, it was like an even stronger and bigger version of the grenade. For the Hunter, you could summon a golden gun, which shoots, I think it was sun energy or something to that effect in fiction, which is very powerful, and the Titan had like an area of effect melee attack. You basically jump right in with your fist and things explode. And it looks like when you level up, you get different options for all these abilities. So you might be able to choose different type of grenade. So you can basically, and the thing is, leveling up just unlocks those things, which I thought was cool. So at any point, I can just switch around what I want to use, maybe depending on what strike mission I go on, or maybe however I want to play in PvP and stuff like that, or just pure preference. And every character in the final game, or maybe we'll even see it in the beta, also has like a different super attack, but that's not something we got to try out in this alpha, which was pretty lacking content, but...
Well, it is an alpha, they want you to play the game. And they have the beta coming out this summer as well.
Yeah, it's, July 17th, if I'm not mistaken, at least on PS4.
Somebody's counting down.
You would be too. You would be too. I'm counting down. I don't even have a PS4, for God's sake.
I don't have to say I was really impressed with it. It looked quite good. I mean, they have great art in this, and it ran basically perfectly fine. I mean, they are not aiming for 60 FPS, but it wasn't like 30 with...
30.
But it's not like they were aiming for 30 with dips or something. It was pretty much rock solid. No vertical sync issues or anything like that. It ran really, really well, considering this is an alpha. And
Bungie have only released one game that wasn't rock solid 30 FPS, and I hated that one game that fucking wasn't rock solid 30.
And
what game is that?
Halo Reach.
Okay.
That game ran like arse.
They also already said like the game even already actually looks better than what we've seen in the alpha, so that's also pretty exciting. I don't know. I just really love the alpha. It totally pushed all the right buttons for me, like having loot, having all these different modes, which all are interesting, and having like at the same time a real story, but also having this exploration option and being able to do everything in co-op, but you can also do everything on your own if you want to. That's just really, really cool, I think. It to me, it seems like they have a real winner on their hands.
I want it really bad. I was sitting, every moment I spent watching the videos of the alpha, I was just like, you know, this is never going to happen, but I would love to have this game, but with Halo skins in it. So I'm using an assault rifle, and I'm using, and I'm on like a Halo. That would be so good.
Microsoft, I have to say that when I used the pulse rifle, it totally felt like I was playing with a DMR. Which is really cool.
But I was earlier on in the year, I was like, I'm not getting a PS4 for one game, and now I'm back to getting, maybe probably looking at getting a PS4 for one game.
Is it that?
Like, I'm so back and forth. It's ridiculous. Oh, don't fucking bring that up, please.
Yeah. I just say we've had this discussion before, haven't we?
Anyway, seems like a really cool game. Can't wait to play more when the beta comes out, and I'm pretty sure I will get the full game.
Okay. Super duper. It sounds good, and a lot of people did come away impressed with it. It's the same thing with Evolve, which apparently I really need to play, because everybody's singing its praise coming out of E3.
Exactly. I had the same problem.
That game looks really crappy to me, but...
I had the same problem with Evolve. I'm not seeing the excitement at the moment. I will need to try it.
I can understand why people would enjoy it, but my big thing is like, what is the longevity of this game? It's one mode.
Yeah. That was the same problem I had with Titanfall, and I have a feeling, I have this lingering feeling that it will be the same with Evolve.
Yeah, that's what I feel, but the way everybody's coming out so happy after playing it, I'm maybe missing something. Maybe I need to give them another chance because everybody else is curious enough with this.
Or maybe it's just people being excited about this, about these three or four matches they play, but once they play hundreds of matches on 12 maps, they excite and buy it on within a month or two.
Yeah, we shall see. We shall see. Any other alphas, betas, demos? That demos are such a rare thing these days. It's kind of sad.
Not really, no.
Okay, so we can talk about actual release games, and we're gonna send it over to Daniel for his take on Watch Dogs.
Oh, don't. All right. Okay. First thing I'm gonna say, right, is do not fucking buy Watch Dogs on PC. If you absolutely have to buy Watch Dogs, you are just going to forget about everything I'm about to say. Just get it on the console, even if it's an Xbox 360 or PS3, because the PC version
is junk.
I have seen the PS3 version. I wouldn't recommend that version.
No,
either.
I would. And let me put it this way. The PS3 version runs at 30 FPS. The PC version, it doesn't matter what PC you have, you will not get good performance on it. And Ubisoft issued a patch to fix performance issues, and it made it worse. That's why you don't fucking buy Ubisoft game Far Cry on PC. Even with the fucking the mod that adds in the E3 effects. Anyway, so Watch Dogs is a game that does not live up to its hype. If you don't know what it is, if you've somehow been in a coma for the last 2 years, it is a game that where it's basically GTA. You have a city like GTA, but it's Chicago, and it's set in the near future where surveillance and computer systems like rule the city, and you are a hacker, and you use the city to your advantage, supposedly. And this is probably the most cynical game I've ever played in my entire life. And by that I mean, it's pretty obvious that what they're doing is, A, they're chasing GTA, and B, there are clear things that the developers wanted to do with the game, but the executives had a completely different idea. And it's so annoying, because you just see the things sort of, that like, when you play the game stealthily, the game is just as good as something like Deus Ex Human Revolution. It is great. But the game doesn't give you very many opportunities where that's actually possible, because it makes it, like, the stealth is kind of broken in the sense that, like, you can shoot a guy in the face, right? If a guy's wearing a helmet, I don't expect an instant headshot, that's fine. But you can shoot a guy in the face, and he'll live if he's got a helmet on, and he won't, he'll just go, "What was that?" And he'll just continue on his patrol. And it's just like, and he's just like, "Mate, you just got shot in the face. And you're none the wiser." And
that's amazing. I haven't even in, like, I don't know, in some really old stealth games, I've never seen something like that happen.
Yeah. You cannot jump manually. You can only vault things that the game, that Ubisoft want you to vault over. So there was one time where I managed to sneak into this hacker computer to get... It does the tower thing where it spins around and says, "You unlocked all this shit on your map." And I snuck into an area. I managed to get the tower thing, and I tried to sneak out. And what happened was there was a bunch of boxes that were stacked up against a fence. And I thought, I'll climb the boxes and I'll go over the fence. It turns out you can't do that because I'm not allowed to vault over the small bit of fence that's blocking my way, and I can't manually jump, so I had to sneak out the way I went in. It's ridiculous. Like, there are times where, there are times where you think you can stealth it, but all of a sudden, some guy randomly changes his patrol pattern, and you get spotted, and you fail the mission instantly. And it's like, what? Why is this in the game? Like, why do I instantly fail missions at some point when I'm doing stealth, and not others when I'm doing stealth? There are objectives where there will be a convoy of guys in cars, and you have to take them down. And by take them down, the game means you have to incapacitate them. But there are other times, which in itself is a problem, because they're in cars. So how do you get them, like, out the car stealthily to incapacitate them, because you've got to interrupt them before they get to the end of their route? But there are also other times where the game says, "Take out this guy," but it actually wants you to kill them. It's just so inconsistent in how everything works. It boggles the mind. And there are so many little things, and it's like, why is this in the game? Like, I don't know if either of you have used the app Foursquare, but the idea of Foursquare is you go to a place, you open Foursquare app, Foursquare recognizes you in that place, and you click, I've been here. So people know where you are, and eventually, if you do that enough times, more than anyone else, become the mayor of that place. You can do that in Watch Dogs for some reason, and it's an online leaderboard thing, and it doesn't make any sense. Like, and it's just like, why have you done this but not fix yourself and not make your objectives make sense? Most of the time, the game's competent. You can run around the city. There's a bunch of stuff to do. Like, you can all of a sudden decide you're going to shoot up the entire city in a massive spider tank. Or you can play a little AR game where you shoot aliens that come out of the sky. And, you know, those things are kind of entertaining. And the online mode can actually be really good. Like, because what happens is, it's kind of like Dark Souls, in the sense that you'll be doing things, and then, like, this happens most of the time when I go to accept a mission, where it will say, you can't accept a mission, you're being invaded. And then and what happens is somebody drops into your game, they start hacking you, and you have to find out who the hacker is and kill them. That's really cool, especially when you know who the hacker is, and they know that you know who the hacker is, and they are running, and you are trying to chase them down. That is fantastic. But again, it's inconsistent, because you can go and search to hack somebody else, and the game will drop you into somebody else's game, and you think you'll have it. The game says, I have a low chance of resisting you, and you think, okay, I've got this one in the bag. When all of a sudden, they pull out a grenade launcher, and you're dead in one hit. And it's like, you told me there was a low chance that they would resist me.
They didn't say there was no chance that they would resist you.
No, but, like, the idea is that that gives you a guide of how hard they're going to hit you as well. But obviously not sometimes, because guy has a grenade launcher. So, and the game is just not entertaining. The story is probably the worst part, because the game's not about hacking. It's about an angry man who kills people but thinks he's self-righteous. And I don't know, like, he has, his family dies, or his niece dies, should I say.
Can I intersect real quick?
Right.
I heard the story is about a guy to which, and terrible things are happening to his family, but he continues what he's doing, but he could just stop and terrible things would stop happening to his family.
That's exactly true. His niece dies, so he goes and finds out who it was that ordered a hit on his niece. So what he ends up doing is getting his sister kidnapped, and he keeps carrying on with the crap that he is doing, and he doesn't... I don't know. I wish the game was about hacking. The game would have been infinitely more interesting if it was about hacking, because it wouldn't have been a one-size-fits-all revenge story with a guy with a smartphone. I don't know. The game is just so... It's just not everything that Ubisoft wants it to be, because of this kind of war between what the developers wanted it to be and what Ubisoft wanted it, what the Ubisoft higher ups wanted it to be. And I think that the game's marketing has just ruined all of it, the potential that it had, because it had quite a bit of potential. Had it been about hacking, it'd have been great. It could have had a really cool story, but it's just a GTA clone, a subpar GTA clone. Not even GTA's stories about... unfortunately, yes, and the PC version doesn't work. So that's all I have to say about that. Okay. Don't buy it. Don't buy it.
Well, I think you're late on that. But like I said, it's been, I think, 4 million opening weekend, 1.25 in its first weekend in the States. So
the power of marketing.
The Ubisoft marketing machine is great, apparently.
Yeah.
Don't forget, if you get one of the special editions, I can't remember which one of the 9 it is, you get Aiden Pierce's, quote, iconic cap. it's just that,
if I remember correctly.
Iconic! They even said so!
Totally iconic.
Yep.
I think I have one of those.
Okay. I guess we will talk about Pushmo World and Pullbox World, which Martin and I got this week. If you fade Pushmo, this is more Pushmo, which is fantastic. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Pushmo. It's one
Pushmo's
of the,
pretty good.
Yeah, it's one of the freshest and most fun puzzle games to come out in recent memory. It's relatively well priced. I think this one is $10. The 3DS version was, I want to say, $6 or $7. You get a ton of content. Technically speaking, you get unlimited content because you can create and share puzzles. And because of the power of Miiverse, it's a lot easier than it was on the 3DS where you had to do QR codes. Here you can just kind of go to Pushmo, what is it, the Pushmo World Fair, and they'll give you just a bunch of puzzles that you can check out. And they give you the newest ones, and they also give you the most popular ones, which are ones that people rated and ranked and commented on.
I just wish they would give us more filter options there, but
yeah, that's kind of weird.
You could still use QR codes, by the way, though.
Yeah, you could, and that's the other thing. You can, any puzzle from the 3DS version works on the Wii U version, and some of the Wii U version puzzles you can do on the 3DS. Not all of them, because there's new elements introduced in the Wii U version that's not in the older version.
Yeah.
What I wished, I mean, and this is going to happen, there's no way around it. I wish there was a system that people actually had to make interesting levels, because what happens is a lot of the times people just make art, and it's like, oh, this is really nice looking, and then you go, and like the puzzle has nothing to do with it, because it's like, oh, move these two blocks, there's the exit, and like the rest of the puzzle is like right there doing nothing.
Yeah, I love, there are some people who just want to do pretty pixel art, but there are a couple of those which can be quite tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah, they also thought about how they can maybe make this a tricky puzzle.
Yeah, yeah. I think the problem is a lot of people don't think it through, because you have to be able to beat your own puzzle in order to share it, which I think is a great thing, because you don't want people to just put up stuff that is impossible. And, I mean, I say this, but I'm also, the game's also guilty of this, and maybe it's the way I think about puzzles, but sometimes you'll get puzzles in the games where you just think you need to do everything, and you realize, like, half of the puzzle is just extraneous for the sake of the design.
Yep.
And that's,
especially during the Euro stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, the challenges are a bit more straightforward because they're just puzzles, but, like, the murals, yeah, a lot of the times you see all this stuff, and, like, okay, how does this add to the puzzle? And you'll spend like 5 minutes on it, then you realize, like, I can pretty much just go around this and be done. I think
sometimes you tend to overthink it in those murals.
Oh, that is always my biggest problem with this game, is I overthink everything. Like, there are puzzles where I will literally, I'll be pushing and pulling them fast. I'm like, this makes no sense. And then I see, like, it's really a clear path once you go outside of that area you're trying to work on.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I could just jump here and there's the thing or whatever.
Yeah, for me, it was that infamous baby puzzle at this point. I was already have solved everything up to, like, half of Murals 2, but I still had not solved that baby. At this point, I'm done with it, but I was totally overthinking it.
Yeah, I was overthinking it as well. And then I went back. Because my thing, my hang up with it was that it was the second part of the baby diaper, I guess. Where there's like the two blocks you have to pull out. And I would pull out the first one and think, and then it's like the other one you have to pull out. And then you have to go back. That's the other thing. And this is this goes hand in hand with the first part. Is sometimes I forget that it's a full puzzle. Like, I'm like, okay, I finished this part of the puzzle, so I'm done with it. Instead of saying, oh, I can go back down and work my way back up once I kind of opened up a new area. And that's another big part
For me, it was getting up the head. And it had exactly the same issue where I was like, well, if I pull out these two, I theoretically could get up. But how do I get back to the start so I can jump onto these things, and it was quite easy to just rearrange a couple of things at the end so I could just jump down and climb back up and then get on the head itself.
Yeah. And in the same camp, just to kind of throw you for a loop, they introduce a new type of pushmo, the mysterious pushmos, which are...
I haven't seen those yet.
How far are you into the game?
Murals 2, like I said.
Oh, okay. I think it opens up after Challenge 3. I think that's the next one after Murals 2. Mm-hmm. And what happens here is, like, these are pushmo puzzles where blocks of the same color move together. So, like, if you have red, like, all the red will move when you pull one red out. So, it gives you a different way of thinking, because not only are you planning what you're doing now, but you also have to plan what's going to happen later on with all the pieces above you and stuff like that. So,
that's cool.
Yeah. And they also, I don't remember this being in the 3DS version, but they also have training push modes, which are basically just, like, platforming challenges. Which are a great break from the actual push modes. Really simple stuff where you just have to figure out how to move blocks to jump up them, not trying to figure out any puzzle. And I enjoy those so much. And you do have to pay all of them, I think. I don't know if you actually care, but I think complete your sticker book. Like every 10 gives you a different sticker. And you get some from mysterious push modes, you get some from training push modes, and you get some from the actual push modes. Yeah, it's a very cheery game.
It's super. I think the way these kind of puzzles work is just really interesting. I think the style of the game is, like I said, really cheery and cute. I thought, for example, Brutus the Dog is super cute. I think the idea of sharing these kind of simple to do puzzles is really great. Just like I said, I wish they had some more filter options, but I guess if you can share, can you create QR codes from puzzles you've done on the Wii U?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I guess then it's still possible for stuff that you might not be able to find through highest rated or new to bubble up, because you could just find something, and if more people find it, they can rate it up, and then it would end up at the top. So
yeah, like I'm sure you're in the Gaff thread as well. Like, I don't know if you saw Bowie Z, I guess. he did the one of the Koopa Kids puzzle, and that thing's just evil as hell. But yeah, that's shared via QR code, and stuff like that. And yeah, if it's anything like Pushmo 3DS, eventually some people start up a website with like some of the most popular ones, and they'll put it up there for you to get. And it's probably the same thing, because you can use all the 3DS ones out there already, so you can find those. Yeah. But yeah, a lot of times,
if Nintendo went the extra mile to put all this functionality into the sharing option, it would have been even better. But otherwise, I'll be honest, I would be even happy if that part wasn't in the game. Like I said, I think there's a lot of content in here. I mean, I thought when I started playing Murals 2, because it was the end of that map, I thought that would have been the end of the game, and I probably would have been happy at that point for €10 or whatever I paid for it. But then people told me, no, there are a bunch of more worlds coming. So game, when it comes to value, it's just tremendous, I think.
Because I think Baby is like puzzle 39, and as far as I know, there's at least 200. I think they said 250 new ones, but...
Yeah, I've been wondering, though, do these training ones count to that number?
I don't think so, because like, it has its own counting scheme.
Hmm.
Like, I am up to... I think I'm up to Murals 3 or 4 right now. Like, I'm up to, like, Yachty Pop or whatever. Because they're still introducing elements. And I kind of agree with people, even though it's not that torturous. But yeah, like, the tutorial goes on forever when you want to just start the game. But, like, once it kind of teaches you the stuff, it's like, okay, we're just going to give you to your own devices now. And if you want, you can go talk to him later on and stuff like that. He'll show up usually at the start of a world that introduces, like, a new push mode. Like, you're up to Miro's 2, so I don't think... Have you... You've got the stairs, right? Or do you not have the stairs?
What do you mean by stairs?
There are certain... there's certain types of push modes where it's, like, a exit entrance stairs. So, like, you can jump through...
Oh, you mean the manholes.
Yes, there we go. Yeah. And then there's... there's something else they introduced, but yeah. There's a bunch of...
They have manholes, they have switches, which can either
push
or pull blocks out.
Yeah.
And...
They introduced some later on as well. They introduced, I think, the yin-yang blocks, which is like, as you pull one, another one goes in. And then they introduce a timer block, which is like you have a set number of time before it retreats.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So,
do you also unlock all that stuff for the editor?
Yeah. You unlock it once you unlock it in the
That's
game.
Great. That's
so, yeah.
Great.
And I don't know if it's like the 3DS version, but I know in the 3DS version you also unlocked a larger canvas when the stage became bigger. So you could do that as well.
I already unlocked one extension for thing. Maybe you just didn't notice.
Yeah, I probably I usually just skip through because I just want to get some more puzzles.
At one point, the game told me, "Hey, you can now do bigger push modes."
There you go. And yeah, it's like I said, it's a fun game. If you've played the 3DS version, this is more of the same. If you haven't played the 3DS version and you're in Europe, I recommend getting them in both. I believe there's a discount if you buy both. It's like you get 30% off the 3DS.
You get 30% off the Wii U one if you have one of the 3DS games.
Okay. So yes, and for some reason we don't get those amazing deals like you folks do.
You already paid. So,
hey, I would have taken 30% off. I mean, granted, like I said, $10 is a very fair price for this game. It's chock full of content, and it hasn't happened yet. But Nintendo's also going to give you, I guess, downloadable puzzles as well. So those will actually be good puzzles that you could probably offer a challenge or something like that. So there's that. Yes. Have either one of you been playing anything else? Oh.
Not anything this new.
I played some Mario Kart and Pikmin 3. Mario Kart is more Mario Kart. it's definitely one of the better Mario Karts, but I'm not blown away by it, to be honest. I'm actually surprised how much I like Pikmin 3, because I really wasn't into the first Pikmin. I haven't played the second one, but I'm really liking Pikmin 3 at this point. So that's a surprise, I guess.
How are you playing it? Is it Wii mode? Is it gamepad? Is it?
I'm just playing it with the gamepad. I don't have a Wii mode.
Is it touchscreen or actual analog controls?
You play with the touchscreen, but I just play with sticks. It's totally fine.
Ba-da-bum-bum-ba-dum-bum. Okay, so it's post-E3, which means there's not a ton of news, because everybody kind of drew their load at E3 or the week before that. But there are still things dripping in, and controversial developers showing back up on Twitter to say something to rile people up and then disappearing. I'm not going to say who. That's a mystery. But I guess the big story of the week, or big non-story of the week, is that Sony pretty much came out and said that they aren't going to support the Vita with big titles anymore. And by saying that, I mean they said it twice, so it's pretty much their stance. I think Yoshida said
official,
it.
Official.
I mean, they didn't even show anything on E3, so.
Before we get into the story, I just found it really funny because there was a thread on Gab about, I think it was like customer loyalty, how Sony stopped supporting the Vita while Nintendo's like doubling down on the Wii U at E3. and people came in to defend Sony and saying like they, you know, they're supporting it and they're doing all this great stuff. And literally the next day, Sony comes out like, yeah, we're not supporting the Vita anymore. And I'm just like, this is why you don't necessarily defend everything. But
well, to be fair though, it's all Nintendo got with 3DS sales declining.
Yeah, but I mean, you could. But I mean, I guess the idea is they could have just as easily made the Wii U more. You know, they had it. Like, even most of the games they had announced last year is still kind of trickling out until 2015. But they announced a huge handful of games that are new and exciting and goes beyond that scope.
Yeah.
They could have.
Like, yeah. I said, it's all they have.
Yeah, but this was not taken well by other people. Though, to be honest, if you've paid attention to the Vita since its launch, you pretty much saw the writing on the wall. Like, I think we even mentioned this before. Like, I've always wondered how a company will pull out of a certain sector without, you know, because Sony's still a console maker. And it's like, Sega had the Game Gear, but that was just kind of like, we're not doing any handhelds anymore. It wasn't like, oh, let's not making Game Gear games. It's like, oh, whatever. But Sony's like, came out and said, like, if you expect big, expensive AAA titles from us, don't. This is our remote play, this is our indie thing, and this is our cross-buy system, that's it.
And if third parties want to make something for it, that's fine with us as well.
Which they won't. I mean, like, once you say you're not going to support it, nobody else is going to support it.
There's no reason for them to. But like I said on Twitter, this is the perfect time for Sony to just finally just drop the price on memory cards. Just get those things out of the door because they need to sell them. And, you know, they don't have there wouldn't be any other reason for people to buy a Vita, so they may as well just do that.
Well, I would actually say this is probably the opposite time, because if your business plan is, this is the luxury car model, if your business plan is that you're going to sell a few of them, but the people who sell it are going to support it, that's just what you do. You get people, you know, it's not like if you drop the price of the memory cards or drop the price of the system, it's going to shoot up and start selling like some tremendous amount. It's just going to be like, we'll milk the few people we have to give us as much money as we can get now. Because like, the only reason you drop price is to help, kind of stir sales. But if that's not what they want, and apparently that's not what they're going to do if they're not supporting it with software, then you might as well keep it at that price. And eventually, it's either going to die down or, you know, it's going to be pocket change for you eventually. Not much, but
I don't know. I just think if you're going to just say, "Oh, it's an indie thing that you can use as a," as a companion device to your PS4, at least give people reason to buy it for that, you know?
If
you're going to say to people, oh yeah, here's a £150 companion device to your PS4, oh yeah, but we want £80 for if you want to store any games off on that thing, that's no.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually surprised, if this is with their play, I'm surprised that they didn't announce like a PS4 bundle at E3. There was like, I think there was an advertisement where it's like $550 gets you a PS4 and it gets you a Vita, which is $50 saving. And I think you also got Borderlands 2. But yeah, it's stuff like that where it's like, if the whole purpose of this is to be a companion device, put it out there now. Because right now, if you say, oh, this is $400, and then you have to pay $200 to get this companion device, it's a lot of money, where I think it's easier for people to kind of buy it once and be like, okay, you know, this is a good deal. Like, $550 is still out of money, but it's easier to swallow than two separate high purchases.
Yeah, and at least then you get a PS4 and a companion device with it, and you can see how they sort of interact with each other at the same time, and you know, whatever. Sony, you're stupid. You did a stupid thing with the Vita again.
Well, I mean, on the bright side, not the bright side. I also think this is probably them saying that they're no longer going to do handhelds beyond this. So you don't have to worry about buying their next handheld and them not supporting it.
I think if Sony was smart, they would not do another handheld, because that's just...
They can't do it. They can't do them. It's as simple as that. You know, even when they have nice hardware, they can't get it in people's hands. So
Honestly speaking, and I'm sure they've tried this before, I would do a PlayStation branded phone, and you kind of get the same indie support. And
they did, and they abandoned that as well.
Yeah,
it was called the Xperia Play, and they never updated the damn thing.
Well, I meant like an actual, PlayStation branded phone.
I think the new tactic is to go through this PlayStation Now stuff to get stuff on other platforms than a PlayStation 4.
Oh, which we don't.
That's probably smarter than actually creating.
It depends, though, because we don't have this in the show notes because, technically speaking, nobody in the beta is supposed to talk about it. But some of the prices for like the PlayStation Now stuff has come out, and people don't seem too thrilled with it.
Didn't they say that the prices are going to be higher than normal anyway because they're just testing?
Yeah, they're testing the
price. They're testing it, but I think it was more. It was partially the price, and it was also partially the SKUs. I think the big one was like 4 hours, which a lot of people thought was just weird. But yeah,
like I said, they're testing this stuff. I wouldn't
put any
too much
stock
attention
in it, but
to that. All that stuff can change.
Yeah. I mean, I personally speaking, I'm only interested in the whole service if it's subscription based or if I can get a decent subscription. I don't really care to rent. I don't rent movies individually either. I mean, why would you do that?
I do.
Do you? Oh, I guess you don't have Netflix.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. It's like Netflix. It's $9 a month, and I can stream as many movies as I want instead of like, oh, iTunes. I can pay $5 to rent this movie for 24 hours or something dumb.
Pay €7 a month to Amazon, and I get as many Blu-rays as I want.
Okay, but that's the thing. That's a subscription model.
Yep.
That's what I meant. It's like you're not gonna spend $7 for a month to rent like the Avengers.
No.
Exactly. If so, that's why I'm all interested in this. If it's what with the subscription model, I don't rent individually. If I want a game that bad, I'll buy it.
On the other hand, also, it really seems like Sony wants all their studios to just work on the PS4. I mean, Sony bends. They made the Uncharted game for the Vita, but it's pretty obvious that they have been after that, or maybe even during the development of that game, have already been working on a PS4 title. I mean, we already have Ready at Dawn, who previously made God of War games for the PSP, are making a PS4 title already. So
and that makes sense. I mean, I think Sony also came out with this during the week, and they said as much. It's like you're going to see fewer games from them just because it takes a lot more resources.
Yeah.
And it makes sense to consolidate your resources onto one platform than it is to split it. I mean, as much as I think the Wii U had a great showing at E3, the 3DS did not. And it's...
Yeah. Wait, the 3DS had any showing to E3? That's news to me.
Well, it had a showing, but that's the point. It's like, Nintendo has shown time and time again, they can't support both devices at the same time, because either the 3DS has an amazing year, and the Wii U has a so-so year, or the Wii U has a good year, and the 3DS has a so-so one. It's the same thing with the Wii and the DS, and it's the same thing with the GameCube, and not even the Game Boy Advance. The Game Boy Advance is mostly ports.
Also for 3DS, I think they announced a couple of interesting things, but I think except for one game, it's just third-party titles which are getting localized, right? Steam is the only new first-party thing, as far as I remember.
I think that was. And it's because they have so many, you only have a finite number of resources, especially if you're Nintendo, who hasn't actually grown in quite some time. But yeah, it makes sense for Sony. They came out and said as much as what's going to support the PS4 this year is going to be indie titles and third-party titles, which is what you can expect from both consoles. I mean, going forward, it's just a lot more resources, and a lot of people are consolidating around known quantities and not necessarily new brands and stuff like that.
It really seems like if you don't want to expand your first-party studios any further, at this point it seems unfeasible to have two platforms at the same time.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, especially we saw this with Sony last gen, and I guess Microsoft, Sony tried to expand, and what happened is they ended up shutting down so many studios just because
That's exactly what I mean. You need more, but at some point it's also too much, and
yeah.
That's also a problem.
Yeah, and this is kind of the problem we see with... there was rumors of Crytek and stuff like that, where they've kind of expanded way beyond their scope of output, where they have, 800 employees, and they do, one game every 2 years.
Well, they do things other than games.
Yeah, it seems like that money's drying up, especially since it's apparently decrying. But again, we don't really talk about rumors on here too much, so we're just going to let that go over. So yes, that was Sony's big week. I also want to say, I understand why, but I hate this. I hate this practice of doing an interview and just fitting it up into 50 different articles.
How else would them game journalists make their money?
I get it for those hits, but it's so annoying when it's like, oh, stay tuned for the end of the week when we share the full interview. Because they take these quotes piecemeal, and then everybody kind of reacts to them, then you see the content and stuff like that. Oh, why did this person comment on this? And it's like, because they were asked, but nobody ever mentions that. It goes throughout. I mean, it was Sony, it was Nintendo, it was Microsoft, it was everybody this week, because everybody's like, we need post E3 content, so we're just going to give you these interview quotes. Speaking of companies in trouble, Capcom announced, I guess, or made public that they would not block or veto any type of takeover attempt.
The investors had to, or no, the stockholders had to vote on it, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they voted against takeover protection.
Yes, which I also want to point out isn't... it doesn't mean that somebody has to buy Capcom.
This is the thing, is like most websites made it out to be as if Capcom's up for sale.
But it also shows that the stockholders don't have a lot of confidence into current Capcom.
Which I can understand, they haven't really had a major breakout hit in some time.
Also, they didn't have any games at E3.
Technically Monster Hunter 4 was there.
Is that a new game, Earl?
Technically it is. I mean,
it's a new game in so much in the sense that they've been re-releasing it for the last 10 years and just this
and
different number.
And they had the Dead Rising DLC, that kind of counts.
No.
They were there more than Square.
Square announced two games, actually, that we didn't necessarily know of. Both of them were Tomb Raider games, and one of them's going to be good. I'm not sure about the other one.
I guess Tomb Raider. I don't count Tomb Raider, though, because that's we bought a company and they make this game, so we're going to keep publishing
it. Well, technically they are Square, though, so...
Yeah, you're right on that. But, it was... and I don't think, as far as I know, Deep Down and Dead Rising are their only plans for current-gen systems.
And the problem is, Deep Down at this point, still only a Japanese only title.
Oh, I figured since it had a big show at both the PlayStation reveal and at their E3, that it was all but confirmed for America.
You would think if they were smart that they would do that.
But, like we said, it doesn't necessarily mean that Capcom's up for purchase. It doesn't mean that the company's going to buy it. And actually, technically speaking, as far as I know, a company doesn't have to outright buy them. A company just needs to have the majority of the shares.
Yeah.
Which I don't know Capcom's business, but that doesn't even mean 51%. It just means you have to have more than any other entity combined.
Yeah.
So it could be like 35% or something like that. That said, I don't see any of the major platform holders buying them, which is what everybody seems to be pushing for. Sony doesn't have money.
Yep.
I don't think Microsoft really cares about Japan anymore. They've tried twice.
Nintendo, please.
Microsoft has money to blow, though. So they could say, like, we don't care about all this Japanese shit, but at least we get Resident Evil.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. And Nintendo would be the opposite of... Nintendo has the money, but they really don't buy companies just because... And it's a wise... Because if you buy a company, it means nothing. because they could buy a company and everybody from Capcom can leave that day. And it's just, it's like we said with Sony, it's resource management. It's like you add 1,000 new employees, what do you do with them?
Nintendo would be because they would probably actually do stuff with Capcom's old IPs. I mean, at least I could see them do interesting stuff with them.
Yeah, I was about to say, people say it, but at the same time, people also always complain about the fact that Nintendo does nothing with their own IPs.
Yeah, but if you, let's say, buy a company like that, you would try to do something with it. So at least they would start out with something and see what sticks.
The other problem would be that right now, Capcom has no type of games in the work for them. I mean, Monster Hunter, but Monster Hunter is usually
Ace Attorney 6, yeah. Ace Attorney 6, don't lie.
Okay, so they can reuse an engine they've been using for 10 years and pick your choice on which game I'm talking about in this scenario. But yeah, it's like you buy a new company that's starting from zero, so it's not even like they would help the Wii U. Like, it's great for investment for the future, I guess, but as of right now, short term, it makes no sense for them to buy it. Especially being that their big focus has seemed to become mobile, and I don't really think any of the big three are in a hurry to become mobile developers.
Yep. I just don't know what's going on with Capcom, because I'm serious, they had nothing at E3. They had just games that were already announced or DLC. I mean, I think pretty sure Deep Down wasn't even true. And what's going on over there?
I was about to say, it was a very bad year for Japan at E3, but I think they say that every year. Because, I mean, I think Microsoft had Scalebound and Sony had Dreadborn, and that was pretty much it for Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, I you know, aside from Nintendo, who's Nintendo. But, yeah, it's like, yeah, Japan, because, like, one or two games, and we call it a day.
Konami was there with Metal Gear Solid 5, at least.
Oh, yeah, that was... Metal Gear is such a Western franchise, though. I always forget that.
Yeah, but, you know... But also, Capcom is also now, at this point, the Metal Gear and Pro Evolution Soccer studio.
You mean Konami?
Konami, I mean. It's Metal Gear on Pro Evolution Soccer. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, I think a lot of companies are going to become that. Japan was just hit first. It's always Japan ahead of the charge, because it's the same thing with mobile gaming when Japan kind of took off before we did. Is you're going to see a lot of companies that just kind of... EA is going to become like the sports and one new IP game. Not one new IP, but one outside-the-box IP. They're going to have Mirror's Edge one year, then Star Wars the other year, and then they're going to alternate.
But the real issue here is, though, like I said, even if Capcom had less titles, at least show them? Or say that you have something in the works? I don't know at this point. When was Resident Evil 6? When did that come out?
2012.
And they had nothing to show this year?
Well, I mean, at the same time, we might have complained it would have been... I mean, technically, they had the Osfana 3 last year, so, I mean... And Dead Rising. But, I mean, I guess, technically speaking, we would have complained if it was, like, EA with their conceptual prototypes.
Yeah, but I just can't believe that they have nothing at this point. How long are the games going to take?
Well, I'm going to pull a Vita fan here and say, wait for TGS.
There'll be something at TGS, I promise.
TGS will be amazing. Just
The Last Guardian will be there too.
Just like it never has been for the past 5 years or something.
Well, yeah, that's... I mean, at this point, I think Sony's the only major company that goes to TGS. And it's gonna be... Final Fantasy 15 and Kingdom Hearts 3 are going to be there. It's going to be an amazing TGS. You're going to have Final Fantasy 15, Kingdom Hearts 3, The Asgardian, Capcom's going to have Resident Evil 7, Mega Man 11, Mega Man X8.
Mega Man Legends 3 is going to be back.
Mega Man Legends. Yeah, it's going to be an amazing TGS. Oh. We're calling it right now.
The system that I bought a 3DS for, the game I bought a 3DS for is going to come back.
Sony's going to announce 12 new Vita titles, all brand new IPs. AAA budget is going to be a TGS for the ages, just so you watch. Speaking of Japanese companies that don't know what they're doing, Ridge Racer. Driftopia was shut down by Namco. Well, it's going to be shut down next month.
Yeah, 15th of August.
Oh, so 2 months from now.
Yeah.
This is like the second game that's been canceled in beta recently, because wasn't there a Star Wars game that was canceled in beta? Or there was a Star Wars game. It's like a TIE
Fighter. Oh yeah, yeah, you're right.
I mean, how bad is your game that you get canceled in beta? Like,
well, it's a Namco free-to-play game, so that bad. Very fucking bad, because Namco, like a couple of years ago, Namco said something like, oh, there can be no good free-to-play games, and they're just proving their own goddamn thesis at this point. Because they don't do good free-to-play games.
All the free-to-play games they have done for PS3 have been total garbage.
Exactly. And
or let's say it like this. The games themselves might be alright, but the business model is horrendous.
And this game is was so good that I didn't even know it existed until today.
Yeah.
I mean, where would you have heard it from, honestly? I don't. Like, it's all you on PC, right? Or is it a
PS3.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Okay, then. I have no excuse then. I just never heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ridge Racer. Is there anything else you folks want to talk about?
We can talk about EA saying, let me get this quote for Hardline. Because people have been saying, well, this will mean that Battlefield will be annualized, right? And the actual quote was from Karl Magnus Trutzon. To the question if Battlefield will be annualized, he said, it doesn't necessarily mean that we need to annualize Battlefield, and that's the way it's going to be forever and ever.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they won't. I mean, this is obviously an attempt to annualize it, because otherwise they would have waited, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I'm going to say this. It's going to be an attempt to annualize Battlefield, or it's a clever way to talk around the annualization, because maybe we'll have, like, we have Battlefield 4 last year, Battlefield Hardline this year, and Battlefront next year, which kind of is Battlefield, but with Star Wars, and then we get Battlefield 5 in the year after that.
Fucking, well, I mean, yeah, it just the shit out of me because of this stuff. It's not, EA kind of says that, like, it's not like we've tried to annualize first-person shooters in the past. No, it's not like we tried to alternate between Battlefield games and really bad Medal of Honor games, is it? Oh, wait! Fucking, fuck you, EA. Shut up. If you're going to do something, at least do what Sony does and be honest about it.
On the same note, Ubisoft came out this week, I believe it was this week, and saying that they are going to cancel more games because people expect a higher quality from them or something along those lines. Yeah. I don't remember.
Good, because it means we'll get less games that are the fucking same then, won't it?
No, it means you're going to get exactly more.
I had a lapse of logic there.
Yeah, it literally means, like, oh, we know Assassin's Creed sells well, so we're going to continue making that.
Yeah,
and watch those.
We have to homogenize even more.
Yeah, that's basically what they said. It's like, yeah, we might be questionable about, like, Rayman or Beyond Good and Evil, because you don't know how they're going to review. But, yeah, Assassin's Creed already does well, so we're going to keep making those. And that's a cynical approach, but honestly speaking, Ubisoft hasn't given much reason not to be cynical about their output.
No, not really.
And it sounds so terrible. We were so high on E3 last week, and now this week it seems so negative. But this is kind of what happens when the dust settles and everybody kind of comes out with their silly quotes and their stupid logic and stuff like that. Because, there's so much to take at E3, and then you stand back and you realize, like, I didn't realize that Capcom didn't really have a presence at E3. You don't realize how few Vita games were made. Well, actually, everybody realized that, because I think Vita got a montage. Of indie titles, which the problem with that is usually almost all the Vita indie titles are titles you can get elsewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm sure
if
this video can run
the Port Station Vita is going to stay the Port Station Vita.
Yeah, but the people don't. It's weird, the Isaac people. I don't like calling people out, and I don't. But it's weird the logic that people use to twist and turn that, because if it was any other system, like if half of it cyber reports and downgrades and cross buy, I think everybody else would complain. But Vita owners is like, yeah, this is why I bought a Vita for. It's like I wanted these games on the go.
You don't you remember the Dreamcast? I mean, the Dreamcast was actually pretty cool, but you know, the smaller the fan base, the more defensive and protective they get of the platform.
Yeah, I mean, look at the Wii U. Whenever somebody cancels a game for Wii U, they're just like, we didn't want your fucking game anyway.
Yeah. You've seen the same with the GameCube. You've seen the same with the Dreamcast. I've seen the same with the Sega Saturn. It's always the fucking same.
To be fair, the Dreamcast had an amazing lineup.
Yeah, the Dreamcast actually has an amazing lineup. I didn't even own a Dreamcast. But still, it's true, right?
Yeah, but to be fair, I mean, kind of going back to the point of Vita, if you were living in that day and age, how did the Dreamcast games for arcade titles, they just ported over?
Yeah.
A lot of the Capcom stuff for arcade titles, not Need for Speed, Crazy Taxi is an arcade title. A lot of it was just like arcade titles were ported over because, you know, the Dreamcast ran on a modified arcade cabinet unit, so you could bring these games over really quickly, which is why it had such a great lineup.
But at the same time, there were games like Skies of Arcadia or Shenmue.
Oh, yeah, there were great original games as well, but a lot of its library was filled in by, like, we'll just do ports.
Yep.
And, you know, Sega did a tremendous job of being a first party with that. They started a new sports line because EA F'd them. They had, you know, they had constant first party support. You know, Skies of Arcadia. They had two Sonic games in the 3 years the system was alive. They had, you know, Sonic Party. Shenmue 2, Seaman. Yeah, ton of great content. I mean, I don't think, you know.
Did you just
I
call Seaman good content? Did I hear that properly?
We can call it interesting content. Is that all right?
As far as being a first party company that's kind of doing all these different, you know, not just relying on the same IPs these fun different experiments. I mean, I think they're only second behind Nintendo as far as a company that can literally support their system on their own.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, is there anything else you folks want to mention?
Don't buy Watch Dogs. Don't do it.
Don't buy Watch Dogs. Buy Pushmo. Actually, it's finally, and actually, I'm going to wait until Thursday to make this proclamation official, but it should be the week that Shovel Knight comes out. Fingers crossed.
It might get delayed again.
It's only been about 7 months since they originally promised it. So.
Early impressions of Shovel Knight quite positive.
Yeah, it should be. It's taken forever to make. Yeah.
What systems is that coming out again? Just Wii U and PC and Mac?
And 3DS,
or
and
3DS as well, right?
Yes. And the week after that, if you haven't played it, Guacamelee comes out.
I already played it. It's really good.
Yeah. And I think it was either free on PlayStation Plus or it cost me like $2. So I already have it.
It's really good, though.
It's also on Steam sale right now, I believe, for like $4.
I think it was yesterday. I'm not sure.
It was yesterday.
I don't pay attention to that because I don't want to spend money. I realize that I buy Steam games and I never actually play them, so
as far as I'm aware, you don't even have a machine to play them on.
Yeah, that's part of the reason, which is why I've always thought that I will play them eventually when I build a computer to play them on, and I've never done that. So I have a bunch of Steam games that I've bought over the years that I don't play, can't play them, and I don't really care for PC gaming, but that's a whole different subject. But yes, it's good. It's a dry summer for retail releases, but it's a great one for indie titles. We have a lot of interesting ones coming up. And hopefully we'll have reviews of this stuff as they come because they're cheaper. And publishers are a lot nicer to us when it comes to indie titles. So we shall see. I don't think we did any comic reviews. I mean, any video game reviews this week. Actually, we haven't done anything. I was just so burnt out after E3 and all of that podcasting and coverage and stuff like that. So, yeah. Hopefully next week we'll be back with... I might do a review of Pushmo if Martin wants to do that. If not, for Martin, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dual Worlds in episode 145.